Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. On our show, we've talked several times about New York's cannabis legalization process and what not just legal purchasing will mean, but also equity, what that should and could look like in the Empire State as these businesses go online. There was what the legislature called the Marijuana Regulation and Tax Act, which passed on March 31st last year, which not only legalized weed for sale and consumption, it requires the state to, quote, make substantial investments in communities and people most impacted by cannabis criminalization to address the collateral consequences of such criminalization. That's a quote from the actual law. So the next step in that process is on the near horizon now, and the state is one step closer to fully legal state-regulated cannabis dispensaries opening up. On August 25th, the Office of Cannabis Management will begin accepting applications for conditional adult-use retail dispensary licenses. In other words, you can open a store. 100 to 200 of these licenses will be awarded to people who either have a cannabis-related conviction prior to when the law was passed in March of last year, or are close family members of someone who does. Now, people interested in obtaining a license must own a qualifying business or nonprofit. We'll explain that. With me now is Chris Alexander, Executive Director of New York's Office of Cannabis Management, who will walk us through the application requirements. Director Alexander, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
There we go. Now we can hear you. Sorry about that if that was on our end. So jump right in here. How will you decide who gets these first 100 to 200 licenses? I understand there's a scoring system.
Absolutely. And, you know, you appreciate the lead in here in identifying some of the eligibility requirements. It requires that we prioritize those who've been impacted. But also, as regulators, we're very about how we build this market out. And so what we've added to that requirement that somebody has been in prohibition and its enforcement, what we call justice involved, is that someone also has experience owning and operating a business. And so what we're going to come from this process with are folks who have been impacted by prohibition, but also have already developed, you know, the tenacity and, you know, other skills required to operate a small business in the state of New York. It's a dual eligibility piece there for eligibility into the CARD program. In addition to that, what we will be evaluating really is their success in operating that legal small business, whatever the type of business had been, looking at how well they operated, how well they were able to maintain compliance with whatever regulatory structure existed for that business will all be part of our review. And we're looking to, as you said, open the application window on August 20th to get these licenses issued and these dispensaries operational.
On August 25th, you broke up for a minute there, as you said, the number August 25th is when this license application process officially opens in New York State. And so people get the acronym there, CARD. It's Conditional Adult Use Retail Dispensary License, a CARD license. And listeners, we're doing this segment because we imagine some of you will have questions. Some of you want to apply to be dispensary owners, to participate as entrepreneurs in this new sector, this coming sector of the New York State economy. So we can take some phone calls for Director Chris Alexander at 212-433-WNYC, especially if you have a question about the process, 212-433-9692, or you can tweet your question at Brian Lehrer. I guess that to some people who haven't been following this, it's going to sound either counterintuitive or just very different from what you usually hear You know, in this case, if you have a criminal record, a certain kind of criminal record, it's actually an advantage for getting into business rather than a mark against you, right?
That is correct. Specific to, of course, marijuana offenses. And as we ended prohibition last year, one of the key, as you mentioned in the lead-in, steps that the legislature took was to make sure that those who had been impacted would not be left behind. You know, we've seen similar steps taken, you know, at the end of prohibition of alcohol, where operators who previously operated illicitly in that moment were also able to transition to the regulated market with the acknowledgement that one, you know, the policy that had been put forward was one that was ineffective and didn't work. But also, you know, there are folks who are, you know, operating that have operational experience that's necessary to build a strong market. And so, you know, the legislature put in that legislative intent of the law, that clear direction to the office. And it's one that we've been, you know, really focused on living up to. Additionally, in our equity definition, other groups that are prioritized here are our small farmers. And, you know, we've been licensing our conditional cultivators for the last several months now. And those small farmers, distressed farmers, most of them, have started to already cultivate the adult use cannabis that is going to line the shelves of the adult use dispensaries. And so, you know, we have really taken a sensitive approach to what the legislature and the governor have directed us to do. And we've made sure that those, you know, really small businesses really have a strong opportunity to compete here in the market that we're building.
Are there certain convictions for marijuana-related offenses from the past that give you that advantage and some that don't? Like if people were convicted of selling really large quantities, some kind of major drug trafficking offense, then they're not eligible for this special upgrade?
The only previous marijuana conviction that makes folks ineligible is the sale of marijuana to a child. That is one of the disqualifying offenses under Section 137 of the law. You know, those individuals who have been previously convicted of that offense would not be eligible for this opportunity. But anybody who's been convicted of a New York State-specific marijuana conviction, not convicted of that offense, does have eligibility here.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, I would also just emphasize that it is a New York State conviction and not, another state or federal conviction, as the office here is working to, you know, really undo the harms that have occurred in this state and not everywhere.
So if somebody had a marijuana conviction in New Jersey but is a current New York resident and wants to apply to run a dispensary, they do not get an advantage from that.
Well, they could still get an advantage through other priority requirements, but not for this particular program.
Right.
So they could still apply when we open up additional dispensary license applications or other license type applications, but not through this particular program.
And can you clarify that part about owning a qualifying business or nonprofit? Is there an intersection here of people who have marijuana convictions and currently already run a qualifying business or nonprofit that you're looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one thing, and if I believe that we actually have the applicant pool available to us as we roll out this program, and, you know, over the last 30 years or so, New York found a way to arrest almost 1.2 million people. And so many of those stories are folks, you know, and, you know, folks who themselves were thrown up against the wall as a young person and then still went on to go on and build a successful business, sometimes because they were unable to get meaningful employment, right? And so, you know, one thing that we have been very aware of is the fact that the population that has been impacted is significantly broad and is not homogenous, right? So we'll have lots of folks who have been impacted as a young person, or even as an older person were impacted directly. But we also expanded the eligibility to capture family members, acknowledging that the impact of a conviction doesn't just sit with the individual. It impacts the whole family. For example, a parent who has a child that's impacted, now that child may not be able to get employment, as I mentioned, but also have restricted access to education funding. right? And so we acknowledge that full impact. And so our justice involvement definition not only captures the individual with the conviction, but the parent, the dependent, the child, the spouse of a person who has a conviction. Now, the piece that kind of turns on here is that that justice-involved individual must also have the experience owning and operating the business. And so, you know, we are aware of really the broad impact that prohibition has had, but also know that as we're building a market, we need to have a strong foundation. And having folks who have business experience is really going to give us the foundation that we need while still meeting the principle and the intent of the law.
We have a few minutes left with Chris Alexander, Executive Director of New York's Office of Cannabis Management, who is walking us through the application requirements and process for owning a dispensary, a store, basically, that will sell legal marijuana products. That application process officially opens on August 25th. And we've been talking so far primarily about the social justice aspects of prioritizing who will get those dispensary licenses. And now let's take some phone calls for you. Mark in Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for taking my call. I had a question for your guest with regards to the eligibility requirements and the criteria that you're looking at. You mentioned that one of the primary criteria is that you know, the person would have needed to have run a small business successfully. But given the income inequality and wealth inequality in some of the communities most affected by cannabis criminalization, and the fact that, you know, the people most affected by it have been incarcerated, might not have had the opportunity to run a small business, how do you reconcile not maybe giving those people an opportunity with the criteria that you're using to approve these licenses?
Well, I appreciate the question. You know, the beautiful thing about our law is that equity is not, it's not a thing that we're trying to achieve, it's the thing. And so our priority for those who've been impacted by prohibition and those from communities that have been overly policed over the last 40 years of marijuana enforcement will continue. So the priority given here to those individuals will also extend to additional license types. We felt prudent, however, that in this initial round of licensure for these foundational dispensaries, that we would find people in the pool who've also been impacted, who have that necessary experience to make sure that a market that we start off with is one that is strong. What I'd also add is kind of, you know, I've been doing work around enforcement and ending prohibition for a long time. And what we found is that, you know, the turn of enforcement did not happen on wealth. It did not happen on socioeconomic status. The turn occurred solely on race and on how people appeared to law enforcement. And so we acknowledge that, you know, people of color are not a monolith. There are people who definitely lack those means, and our office is committed to delivering support resources to make sure folks have access to actual, you know, grants and zero interest loans that we'll be rolling out in the next year. But also that there are folks with some wealth who, despite their socioeconomic status, were still swept up in enforcement. And so we're sensitive to that, the differences in that group. And I think, you know, the prudent choice of making sure that folks have some experience was one that was necessary to make sure we have a strong market.
Huh. Because a number of our callers are asking the same question. And I was wondering, too, after your previous answer, like, isn't requiring folks to already have a business discriminating against those who were the most harmed by the previous prohibition because they were prevented from really entering the economy?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's a discriminatory approach. If anything, I think it's acknowledging folks who, despite the odds, still went out and built successful, strong businesses, right? And so, again, it's just acknowledging that there are, even within the applicant pool, individuals who, despite that conviction, still went on to do some pretty good, cool things and do some good work. And so, you know, we're just acknowledging that difference in the applicant pool and identifying that there's some benefit to getting those folks this early opportunity, with the understanding that as we move forward, those who did not or were not able to have their own businesses or build up businesses that they would have liked to build will still get support from our offices as they work to enter New York's cannabis market.
Duke in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Duke.
Hey, Brian. Your guest is Mr. Alexander?
Yes, Chris Alexander. Executive Director of the New York State Office of Cannabis Management. Go ahead.
I was wondering, my question was, does he have any information on how to obtain employment in this new industry? Not so
in other
much.
Words, short of being an owner.
Right, right. Is there anything? I was just curious. Maybe he would know something.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And we're working currently with our partners in state government and with our higher education institutions across the state to develop educational programs so that folks can not only get employment, but get significant, you know, meaningful employment in this industry. We're developing with the SUNY and CUNY institutions in the state of New York job training and skill development programs right now. Just a couple weeks ago, the governor announced a $5 million grant going to these institutions to act so you can access these classes to develop some skill sets and then go through a process where you get job placement with operators that come online here in New York. The Department of Labor is also doing some workforce development programs. They're not being run specifically out of our office, but if you reach out to our office, we can definitely connect you to those programs.
And there, too, any particular help or advantage for people who have passed marijuana convictions before the legalization law was passed?
I'm not sure specifically on the SUNY and CUNY front, but absolutely as part of the requirement for all licensees is an attention to ensuring that your workforce is also comprised of people who've been previously impacted. And so even if it's not going through the program, at the end of the program, employers or licensees, from our perspective, do have an eye to making sure that their workforce is representative of people who've been impacted by prohibition, specifically people with arrest or convictions for marijuana offenses in the state of New York.
Duke, I hope that's helpful. Thank you for your call. Marie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Brian. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I have a question about the proliferation of storefronts. I live on the Upper West Side, but I see them all over the city. They're storefronts that are essentially selling, you know, cannabis paraphernalia. They might have some snacks in the window, but essentially they're pot shops. You know, they're selling pipes and everything. And some of them, in fact, in my neighborhood on the Upper West Side is actually already selling marijuana. And so they've now gotten a foothold into all of these storefronts, some near schools, by the way, and houses of worship. And I wonder what the impact of those stores that are now already open and running, and many of them selling pot, will have on this group of this sort of 100, 200 cohorts who will already be at a disadvantage because these illegal shops are already operating in the city. Yeah. And I'll take the response off the call. Thank you so much.
Mary, thank you. And we have another caller who we're not going to have time to put on the air, but has a related question, which is, will some of these existing smoke shops be able to convert to dispensaries?
Most likely, and well, let me answer the first question. I think I am equally concerned and frustrated by the proliferation of these smoke shops in particular. Our office has, you know, is the newest state agency, and so we're currently building our capacity. But, you know, one thing that we have been very clear with in our direct communication to operators of these shops is that they are not sanctioned to sell adult use cannabis. They are not allowed to sell adult use cannabis, and they are operating in violation of New York State cannabis law, of New York State penal law, of New York State tax law, and of New York City's municipal law. And so what we've been doing across the state is empowering municipal governments here in the city as well to take action. And I'm very pleased that the NYPD just yesterday towed and seized a bunch of trucks that were engaged in this illicit activity. You know, my big concern, and this, of course, you heard the language I used earlier about making sure that folks who have previously participated in the illicit market have an opportunity to transfer over. But folks who are operating now in this gap as open storefronts are really creating a lot of confusion for New Yorkers. You know, when somebody goes to these shops, they're unclear if a shop is operating under a license, if the products being sold are safe and are tested. And what we have tried to continue to make clear is that they are not. You know, the products that are in these shops are not tested. They're not safe. We don't know what's in them. We don't know what you're purchasing. And so I implore your listeners, as well as all New Yorkers, to not visit them. On an enforcement side, you know, we have, from as we're building up our capacity, not only send cease and desist letters to these operations and let them know that their operation, you know, puts in danger their ability to secure a license from us to operate an actual adult use cannabis store, but we've started to empower localities to take the necessary steps to shut these down using their existing municipal law. These are not, stores under our jurisdiction operating with our blessing. Instead, they're operating in violation of, local health law, for example. And I know that, New York City's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, has their inspectors going in to seize products and identifying folks engaging in this sale that are putting public health at risk. And, I'd say one more thing just, to emphasize a point here. One of the main components of a reason behind ending prohibition was to create a safer environment for cannabis consumers so they have safer, more regulated products. But it was also to invest resources back into communities that have been most impacted. And what these stores are doing is in direct violation of everything that all the advocates and incredible leaders fought for, which is to create an industry that would invest back into New Yorkers, into communities most impacted. And so we share the concern. What I believe is that when we put up those dispensaries will be selling safe and higher quality products, and we'll be doing so in a way that is rooted in community, and we will be able to take those customers away from these illicit shops and have them visit more frequently our regulated, state-of-the-art dispensaries. And so I know that we'll be competing with them for some time until we're able to shut them all down, but that is their end. They will be shut down in the near future.
We're out of time, except for you to tell people where they can find out more information about the dispensary application process and how to actually start to apply once this officially opens on August 25th.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the time, Brian. So, folks, you can go on to cannabis.ny.gov. That's cannabis.ny.gov. On our website, we have step-by-step instructions on how to complete the application, the documents that you'll need to procure to submit your application. It is a fully online application that you can complete yourself. You don't need to hire expensive consultants to do so. We do need business records from the previous business, as well as a certificate of disposition to show the conviction that makes you eligible for the offense. But there's a full application mock-up on the website, as well as webinars on our YouTube page and on the website to give folks actual step-by-step instructions how to apply. So I thank you for the opportunity, and of course, I encourage everybody to go to cannabis.ny.gov to get all the information needed to apply.
Chris Alexander, Executive Director of New York's Office of Cannabis Management. Thanks so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you, Brian.